The sport of fly fishing has been around for a few thousand years. So how does innovation take place when you're talking about presenting flies that catch fish? Plus, the rise of fishing for predator fish and how that game has changed. Hi, everyone. I'm the host of the Carolina Outdoors, Bill Bartee. Those topics and more are what we're going to talk about on this segment of the Carolina Outdoors by bringing on an innovator within the sport of fly fishing. Our next guest started as a fishing guide in his youth in Blue Ridge, Virginia. He found the challenge of creating flies and equipment to bring advantage to himself and to his clients. He's also the author of several books and articles on fly fishing, including his most recent book, Game Changer, Tying Flies That Look and Swim Like the Real Thing. Join me in welcoming Blaine Chocolate. Blaine, welcome to the Carolina Outdoors.
I appreciate you having me. Excited to talk about, I guess, where I've been and where I'm going.
That's exactly right. Well, we look forward to learning a little bit about that. And, of course, where you've been. You've had more than a career, even thus far, as a young man in the sport of fly fishing. But, Blaine, in your tenure, in your career, fly fishing has changed quite a bit. Of course, the movie A River Runs Through It for a lot of people in the 1990s is used as a mark date for a growth time in the sport of fly fishing. And of course, we have it here. The Angling Trade Survey says that 2020 fly fishing enjoyed a single growth rate of more than 11%, which was the largest year-over-year bump on record within the sport. That's good news for us, of course, our sponsor, Jesse Brown's People Getting Outdoors, but it can mean something different to anglers and force them to explore new and different places and species to fish. Tell us about the expanse of fly fishing from where you've been and where it is now.
Sure. Well, I've been guiding now for over 30 years, but I started, you know, grew up here in the Blue Ridge Mountains in Virginia. First starting to target trout, brook trout specifically. You know, I got my dad and grandfather got me into it when I was 9 years old. And it just kind of struck a chord with me. And shortly after I went on my first trip with them, you know, that following Christmas, I got my own outfit and they also got me a fly tying kit. And, at that same time, there was some very important people that ended up being very important to me in my life as I got older. Flip Pallet and Larry Dahlberg both had shows on, which really opened my eyes to other fish species to target on fly other than, you know, trout, which being here where I live, we had a variety of different species to target. We had great smallmouth bass fishing. We had lake run striped bass here locally. We had stripers in our lakes. And something that really struck a chord with me with Larry Dahlberg's show is he had this one particular show that was featuring muskie and muskie on the fly up in Canada. And, you know, that just resonated with me, to be honest. It was something that really struck a chord where I felt like I could do that because it was local and I knew we had them here. But I was young, obviously, but jumping forward to when I was like 16 and got a license, that's when I really started exploring a lot. And also when I really started guiding, when I was 16, I met some people early in my life, Harrison Steves and Steve Heiner, both worked at Virginia Tech, both biologists, one an entomologist. And they taught me early on as a 15-year-old that fly design was very important. And, not getting too involved in that, but that just kind of pushed me forward. And, you know, I just kind of moved on from the trout world, and that muskie show that Dahlberg had on around that same time frame really made me want to target muskies. And then later on in my life, I thought it'd be a great idea to start guiding for muskies on a fly rod. And I like to call it the struggle bus, and I'm always driving it. You know, my dad said, if you're going to be stupid, you better be tough. And, you know, trying to catch a fish of 10,000 casts on a fly rod, which makes it even harder, not the smartest thing you could do as a career. So my first thing was trying to figure out how to catch a fish that doesn't want to be caught or doesn't have to eat at any particular time. And a lot of this stuff, for me, just kind of fell into place. You know, I was like, you know, when I met Harrison Steves years ago, he's a great fly designer himself, but he stayed in the trout world. And I was just always into other species.
Blaine, what is it about a fish like a muskie, a fish of 10,000 casts, as it's called, and as you mentioned, what is it about something that's a predatory fish, you know, is hyper carnivorous, so you would think that thing's ready to eat. What makes them so tough to take a fly?
Well, muskies, you got to take a muskie's, they're very similar to, like, say, a lion or a snake. Mm-hmm. They don't eat constantly because they're so good at what they do. They'll go kill something. Generally, in our waters, they'll go kill something that's pretty good size, and then lay around and sleep until they get hungry again and then go kill something else. Very similar to a giant brown trout. You know, once a big trout, a big brown specifically, gets to a certain size, it stops eating bugs 90% of the time. You know, they will be opportunistic, and if there's a big hatch, they will be sipping bugs or whatever it may be. But, you know, Lefty would always say elephants eat peanuts, but they don't always, they don't get that big by just eating peanuts, right? So,
yes.
You know, muskies, they don't have to eat, much like other fish species. A lot of fish species have to constantly eat to maintain their weight, maintain their size, and grow. Muskies, they reach a certain point, and as soon as they are small, I mean, where they can eat anything, they just are very fast. They're very good at what they do, and they're always going to be the apex predator in any body of water that they live in. So that being said, there's a lot of things I learned about muskies, and mostly by failure, on how to catch them, because I had to go back and learn what the biologic makeup of this fish species was to make them, what made them tick, basically. What are the built-in biologic makeup of this fish? Like, they have their long bodies, they're built for short bursts of speed, they have big heads, a lot of teeth, and that tells you a lot of things about how they feed too. So fish with teeth generally are grabbing onto something and T-boning it, and so that tells you one thing: they want to see profile. So I learned a lot about that by not catching them. But finally, I started putting together a few things here and there, and you just file it away. And then the next thing you know, you have a body of work that will help you kind of start designing flies that were getting a little bit more of a positive reaction on these fish species.
Well, you may be.
And that's really kind of how it went for me.
You may be answering my question. My next question was, and this is a quote, Bob Popovich, author of Pop Flies and Fly Design, called you a fisherman's fly designer. His sense of what makes a fly work is the absolute best ever. What's that mean to you, Blaine, to hear those words, a fisherman's fly designer?
Well, that's a great honor. I mean, Bob Popovich is one of my heroes and mentors over the years. He meant a lot to me, and he was a major impact for me and my fly designs, because Bob, in my mind, is the best fly designer that's ever lived. And I guess what he means by that is and that's a great honor that he said that, but I think what he means by that is I really think about what fish see and how fish are built, and really study just by necessity, because I am a guide, and my pocketbook or my billfold is directly impacted by my success on and off the water, right? So it's one of those things, like, you better be tying flies that catch fish or you're not going to have repeat customers. So I think that's kind of what he means. I really think about, you know, what makes these fish tick, and I'm designing flies that the fish are, in my mind, are wanting to see. And a lot of it's based on lore design, you know. So, you know, Bob Popovich is my greatest and favorite fly designer, but Larry Dahlberg's my favorite angler of all time. I think he's the greatest angler that's ever lived. And I've really studied his thought process on fish behavior, and he's designed some of the best flies and lures that's ever been made. So I just kind of look back and really kind of sat on the sidelines and watched these heroes of mine and read their books and watched them on TV and got to meet them at shows and just kind of been a student of the game, I would say, on and off the water.
Well, now that
I guess that would be my thought on what he's why he said that.
Yeah, and I would come back at you now because as that student that you were, and it sounds like still are, but now you are the teacher with the career that you've had. And if our listeners are just joining the Carolina Outdoors, I'm your host, Bill Bartee. Our guest is Blaine Chocolate from the Chocolate Factory. He's going to make an appearance in Charlotte, North Carolina, May 4th. He's going to be with our sponsors, Jesse Brown's, May 4th. And Blaine, you're going to be talking about some of this design. You've got a couple of different private fly tying classes that are going to be going on, as well as a public talk on predator and prey talk in regards to rod and cast and how you work that fly to have success on the waters. But you're also going to have these two different private fly tying classes. One is from 9 to 11. There's a limit on the number of people, so we encourage people to contact our friends over at Jesse Brown's to get signed up. But Blaine, talk to us about how important it is to be correctly taught something like the jerk changer, which is one of your prize lures, the techniques and secrets to customize its performance, stuff like the amount of material that you use, where you stop a wrap, all of those little nuances go into how that fly is going to maneuver through the water to capture that fish's attention and set the hook, if you will. Can you talk to us about the importance of being properly taught a fly like the jerk changer, which you're going to be tying with the class, or something like the game changer Helgramite?
Absolutely. Yeah, so for me, going back a little bit what I said earlier on how what makes fish tick and seeing what they see and how they react positively or negatively to what I throw at them, whether it's a fly or a lure or live bait, and using this water that I'm fishing as a classroom, it teaches you different things. And then getting back on the vise and trying to design a fly that would act like a certain lure, a very successful lure that's been manufactured, right? So the jerk changer is my version of a jerk bait slash glide bait. So those things are very erratic. You know, a fluke, whether it's a hard version of that or a soft bait or a soft plastic version. The fluke is one of the most famous and most successful soft plastic lures that's ever been designed. And that erratic twitching and darting motion is just a major fish trigger, right? So it was always my goal to create something like that. But to be able to create something that will glide and twitch and jerk in certain ways is not always easy to figure out. And that's why I was really excited once I figured all that out, just kind of working out the problems in my mind and understanding laminar flow, which could get super techy. But and that's what I talk about in these classes and stuff. And that's the important thing because I've done all the research. So you can't just put one material on this particular style fly and think it's going to work because it didn't, because I tried. You know, like I said, a lot of my success comes from failure. And just putting in the hours and the work is what's made it work for me. And that's kind of my idea of why you would want to, if you're serious about fly tying and fly fishing and design, that's why I think it's important to learn from the person that created it, because they put in all the work and they understand the do's and don'ts. And it just makes the learning curve that much easier and much faster, just like, you know, going to new water and hiring a guide is a whole lot faster and steeper, quicker learning curve than getting out there and putting in the hours and hours and hours and hours. The guide's already done it for you. So that's the importance in my mind is taking a class, especially in person. I mean, you can read a book like my book, that I have, but I'm actually visually seeing stuff. In my mind, I'm a much better learner by visually looking at something being made or fished or whatever than I am reading about it. I can visually see it. It's a whole lot. I can learn a whole lot faster.
Hey, Blaine, I'm going to jump in because not only are you designing really revolutionary flies to help anglers out there, but you also, we're going to talk about the book, your 2024 release, the newest book out by Blaine Chocolate, our guest here on the Carolina Outdoors. But you're also involved in helping companies, equipment companies in the fly rodding business with the design of their equipment and how those flies that you've designed are delivered. Talk to us about your relationship with a company like Temple Fork Outfitters, the fly rod company, or Scientific Anglers, the fly line company, in design and creation of rods and lines that help deliver these flies that either you've designed or maybe just us anglers are using, whether it be a Clouser minnow or a Dahlberg diver. Talk to us about your input with a company like TFO or SA in getting equipment properly made and designed.
Sure. So a lot of this goes back to the many years of guiding, over 30 years now, and having different clients from different walks of life and different skill levels, right? So you can put different style rods, different casting rods. They'll have different actions and lines. And it's kind of that old saying is like, if you have the wrong tool for the job is much harder and it takes you that much longer to do it. But if you have the right tool for the job, then the job's a lot faster and a lot more enjoyable. So for me as a guide and a designer, I have a firsthand knowledge of what works, what doesn't work. And I can give that input to these companies because I am on the water and I can put these different prototypes and ideas in the hands of my clients and myself because I'm on the water all the time. So if I see something that's working that might need tweaking, I can give them that information. And you know, part of the solution is also part of the problem. So, well, for example, you know, getting into this bigger predator and prey thing that I've gotten myself into over the years, one, fly lines have had to change and adapt to these larger flies that we're casting now on the fly rod. So, you know, you have different resins. You know, the fly rod papers haven't really changed over the years. You can only have so many different mandrels. But what has changed is how the materials that you put on these mandrels and the resins that are put together. So it's made them stronger and faster and lighter, and they respond in certain ways. So the same technology has to be adapted in the fly line too. Especially when you take a fly that, you know, in grain weight, you're starting to look at grain weights now in some of these larger predator flies. Because some of the giant predators we're targeting, like muskies over 50 inches, and you know, here in Virginia, the past couple of years, I've been targeting the largest redfish on the planet, which are, you know, in North Carolina's got them too. You're talking redfish that are, you know, averaging 48 plus inches long and, you know, getting up in that 50, 60 plus pound range. And, you know, we're throwing flies that are 10, 12 inches at them. And so you got to have the right tool for that job. And a prime example of this is a fly rod is delivering what the fly line does and how the line and the fly reacts to it in the air. But you don't want to have a super fast action rod to throw big flies. Because you're casting so much. And what happens with a super fast rod is it recovers, it uncoils and recoils super quick. And what happens is a lot of people can't recover what's happening fast enough because what happens when you have such a big fly on there, you get recoil when it straightens out on the back cast from inertia. And that'll make that rod
bad news.
Yeah, it's bad news. Not only that, but it also it's very hard on your body because the faster the rod, the more you feel it in your wrist, your shoulder, your elbow.
Makes you feel like you've chopped chop wood all day long out there trying to catch these fish. And Blaine, you don't get out much. This is going to be one of your only trips down to the Charlotte area, your time there at Jesse Brown's May 4th. We're going to have you at Jesse Brown's all day long, though, 9 till 5, including a book signing. Meet Blaine and have him personalize a copy of his newest book, Game Changer, Tying Flies That Look and Swim Like the Real Thing. We're going to have this in the liner notes, highlights of the Carolina Outdoors, Blaine Chocolate from the Chocolate Factory joining us here on the Carolina Outdoors. Blaine, thank you for being here.
Oh, I greatly appreciate it and really looking forward to getting down there.
Well,
I don't get down there very much, but I love getting into North Carolina, especially the North Carolina coast and the mountains there. So the Charlotte area, I drive by it a lot on the way to different places, but I haven't had a chance to spend a lot of time there other than when you guys used to have a show there, you know?
Yep. So. Well, we look forward to having you. May 4th, we have to get you back on the Carolina Outdoors to talk about some more of this stuff, but thank you for being on with us today.